This week, the Supreme Court made its first ruling on a case about the nebulous world of violent online speech. The case hinges on Anthony Alonis, a Pennsylvania man who wrote on Facebook about murdering his estranged wife and shooting up a school. Alonis was sentenced to nearly 4 years in jail in 2011 on the basis that a reasonable person could believe that he wrote, quote, true threats. But he appealed to the Supreme Court, arguing that these posts were rap lyrics and therapeutic, not meant to be taken seriously. He even wrote, quote, art is about pushing limits. He said his intentions should be taken into account. And at the high court, he prevailed. Dahlia Lithwick wrote about the case for Slate.
They didn't do the thing everyone expected, which was make some grand pronouncement about the First Amendment. The First Amendment protects rap lyrics, or the First Amendment does not protect true threats online. In fact, the court went out of its way to say, you know what? We're just going to talk about the intent requirement in this one threat statute. And in the end, the court said, you can't only listen to the victim. That's not enough, says the court. The court says, we have to look at what Anthony Alonis wanted and intended to do. So it's a big deal. And then they didn't say, here's the state of mind that Anthony Alonis has to have. So they're kicking it back to the lower court and saying, figure out again what the test is without saying what the test is. Get back to us and we'll let you know if you got it right. So even in that narrow context, they didn't clarify.
Okay, so you have this case. The lower court has to determine a test for state of mind. The court decided not to deal with the First Amendment and rap music, which in a way is kind of a relief because what the hell do these 80-year-olds know about the sort of idiom of rap music? I just don't think they could decide. In fact, I'm hard-pressed to think of a court that actually could. Is that why the court avoided a big constitutional ruling on this case?
Well, it's a really good point. I will say there was an amicus brief, a friend of the court brief that was filed in this case, literally about rap music. This is a court, you know, that loves opera. Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg and Antonin Scalia famously go to the opera together. There was a brief, literally, that attempted to say, here's what rap music is and what it would mean to not protect that with the same protections that you'd afford La Traviata. And so there was an attempt, I think, to educate the justices about rap. It's interesting, if you look at the majority opinion that is written by Chief Justice John Roberts, he goes out of his way to not just quote at length Anthony Alonis's rather disgusting screeds about his wife, but he compares them to Eminem. And I think one of the reasons the court just did not want to get into these questions of what's a true threat under First Amendment law and what is rap music and is it different even though it's very violent and what is the intersection between unbelievable violence and harassment women feel online and the laws that are meant to protect them. All of that was swirling around this case, and I think the justices just said, this is a really new world. We don't know this world. So let's do something really minimal. Let's tweak the criminal law here and make sure that nobody goes to jail just because someone else felt scared. And beyond that, let's let this play out in the lower courts and in the future. And I think that's a big disappointment for a lot of women's groups who wanted to get a clear pronouncement from the court that this is not protected speech. They didn't get that.
Would you agree that those women's groups are right to be concerned? I mean, will this ruling make it harder to prosecute people for threats that are made on Facebook? Gizmodo put it pretty bluntly. It wrote, quote, the Supreme Court today ruled in favor of people being scary, you should pardon the expression, dicks on the internet. I mean, is that an exaggeration?
I don't think so. I mean, I'm looking at this Pew study that says 25% of women have been sexually harassed online. 26% of women have been stalked online. You know, there are women's groups who are saying that 90% of the initial violence directed toward women before it becomes, you know, face-to-face violence is online violence. And I read a quote that the internet is the 21st century crime scene, you know, that this is a place where horrific, horrific threats and violence are aimed particularly at women. And I do think that by saying we're going to focus on the intent of the harasser and not the reaction of the listener, of course I think those groups are right to be disturbed. I think they're right to say, you know, now he's just going to say, oh, I was kidding, or, you know, it was art, or the kinds of things that you say when you're trying to defend the fact that you were terrorizing someone. And so it does seem to me as though there are real consequences for women.
Now, under the First Amendment, you're allowed to threaten people, aren't you?
Sure, and you're allowed to harass people, and you're allowed to do all sorts of things. There are several exceptions that are carved out of the First Amendment, right? There's fighting words, there's incitement, there's obscenity. And one of the things that is not protected speech is something called true threats. And it's a very, very complicated doctrine, and it's not invoked very often. So we don't really understand what a true threat is, and there certainly has never been a case that's clarified in internet land what a true threat is. The question was supposed to be, is this a true threat, or should this kind of language be protected? And that's the First Amendment question that the court simply ducked this week.
It's a particularly difficult case for those of us who are, I won't say free speech absolutists, but we get pretty close to it, because the lyrics that Alon has posted are just horrifying, regardless of what he says he was doing. You know, things like, there's one way to love you, but 1,000 ways to kill you, and I'm not going to rest until your body is a mess, soaked in blood, dying from all the little cuts. Hurry up and die so I can... Anyway, I'm not even going to go through, but it's pretty bad. And I am not an aficionado of rap music, so I don't know how to judge it. All I know is that when someone says something, I think our instinct is to think they mean it.
This is a really tricky case for me. I've actually been called out this week for writing on both sides of it. You know, the framers thought we could not be free if we couldn't say what we wanted to. And certainly if the test was not what I intended to say or what I was trying to say, but how other people heard it, I think the framers would be horrified. But the other thing I think that's really important is to understand that even if this case goes back, he may still be quite culpable under even a stricter standard, because he also posted things where he was like showing a little map of how to get to her house and, you know, made really what looked like it crossed the line, no matter what the test is. I react the way you do. If someone was posting those things about me online, I would think they were threats, no matter what the mental state requirement is. But one of the things that a lot of people who write and think about the internet felt strongly on Alonis' side is that the internet changes things. It's not a face-to-face threat. Something that you write on your Facebook page, you know, he wasn't tagging her. It was intended, he says, to work out his issues. And that in this brave new world where things can be yanked out of context and seen by millions of people, it's just not the same as the rules that govern how we talk face-to-face.
I agree with all of that. It's not the same. And he didn't tag her, but he posted a map to her house.
Again, this is such a hard case because it looks to me as though he intended to terrorize her. And so even under a higher standard, I suspect he could still be found guilty. You know, and I've talked to women whose lives have been destroyed by words written online. And I do think we need to think about it in a really systematic way in our criminal law, which we haven't done. But I do think at the end of the day, we just have to circle back to the fact that there's a reason that the framers thought that we needed to be free to say what we're saying. And I think Anthony Alonis would say, my words, my fantasies about hurting my estranged wife are no different from what Eminem wrote about his wife, and that was considered great art.
Thank you, Dahlia.
Oh, it's a pleasure, Brooke. It's always a pleasure.
Dahlia Lithwick writes about the courts and the law for Slate.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, the New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.